rather put out. In a moment, though, here on Radio 4, we step behind closed doors after a look ahead to tonight's Front Row with Samira Ahmed.
Pianist Pierre-Laurent Amar is planning to greet the dawn of the summer solstice in a unique way, performing Messiaen's celebration of birdsong, the Catalogue d'Oiseaux.
Every bird sings differently. Some of them shout, and others make melodious melodies. Some of them sing for a very short amount of time, and others sing forever.
He's on Front Row tonight with me, Samira Ahmed, at 7:15.
But now we continue our series of three dramas set inside legal hearings, behind closed doors. Today, barrister Rebecca Nyman is representing a client at a mental health tribunal. Andrew has been in a high-security mental hospital for 7 years. Now he thinks he's fit to be released. But will the tribunal agree? Today's drama is Section, by Clara Glynn.
I'm here to see Andrew Caston in Finn Ward.
Sign here.
Right.
Put your handbag in one of the lockers behind you. You as lawyer?
Yes.
Put this on your belt.
Right. When you're visiting a secure mental hospital, never forget to wear a belt. You need one to attach this electronic key fob thing to. So if something kicks off and the unit goes into lockdown, security can see exactly where all the visitors are.
Ms. Nyman?
Yes.
Follow me.
There are four locked doors to get through before I reach my client.
Yes?
She's here for Andrew.
Come in.
Put him in the little sitting room so you can get some privacy.
How is he?
Extremely anxious, I'd say. It's a big day for him.
This is a total waste of time.
Well, good morning, Andrew. Nice to see you too.
I don't even know why you bother coming.
I'm here because you've got your tribunal today.
Yeah, I'm not a complete idiot.
In 20 minutes to be exact, so we've just got time to go through
What's the point?
The sorts of questions the tribunal might ask you.
There's no point.
Andrew,
They're not going to listen to me, are they? They've made up their minds, the doctors. They've made up their minds, and it doesn't make any difference what I say.
It's an independent tribunal. They'll hear the evidence and they'll decide.
This is a waste of time.
Really? What else were you going to be doing this morning? Look at me, Andrew. Listen to me. I'm your lawyer. That means I'll take your instructions. If you don't feel you're ready to leave, we'll withdraw your application.
Have you got any idea what it's like in here?
A little.
I just want to be somewhere where no one tells me what to do.
Then you need to try and get a positive attitude to this. Otherwise, you're going to sink your own ship.
Don't talk to me like I'm an idiot.
I didn't.
I'm not an idiot.
No,
this is my third tribunal.
I know.
They never let me out.
This time they might. There's no guarantees, but you're in with a chance. If, and only if, you give it your best shot. Okay?
Okay. My mother's come in. She wants to speak up for me.
Really?
I know she didn't turn up the last time, but this time she's promised.
They've booked a meeting room in A-Wing. If you're ready, I'll walk you across.
Andrew?
I suppose.
New shoes. Very nice. I like the colour. Did you get them for the tribunal?
They'll not see my feet. I'll be sitting down.
I'm ably assisted today by Dr. Ruckman.
Good morning.
And Blanche Hempson, who is the lay member of our panel.
Hello.
Now, would you like us to refer to you as Andrew or Mr. Caston during the hearing?
Andrew is fine.
Good. I like to keep proceedings as informal as possible.
What's your name?
You can call me Judge or Sir, I don't mind which.
But is that your name?
Andrew.
That's what you can call me.
Then I've changed my mind. You can call me Mr. Caston.
Right you are. Dr. Reynolds, if we could begin with you as Mr. Caston's consultant psychiatrist.
Yes, Judge.
Our medical panel member will be asking you some questions. Dr. Bruckman.
Dr. Reynolds, how long have you been in charge of the team treating Mr. Caston?
3 years.
In your medical report, you describe him as normally compliant.
Yes. Most of the time, Andrew, Mr. Caston doesn't present any problem to the team.
But when he does, when something goes wrong, do you know what triggers it?
Stress. And the, thankfully, rare occasions where he doesn't take his medication.
But overall, his schizophrenia is well managed.
Yes.
But you're not recommending his release?
No. I and the rest of the treating team feel Andrew's condition is well managed precisely because he is in the unit. We give him structure and support. We make sure he's taking his antipsychotic medications. We'd be very concerned that his condition would spiral out of control if he were back in the outside world.
Last time Mr. Caston lived independently was 2009, wasn't it?
Yes, Judge.
He must have been 21 then. What happened?
He set fire to his old school. This resulted in him being sectioned. I was not Andrew's consultant then, but the notes from the time show that Andrew's arson attack happened after he'd decided that his GP and his mother were trying to poison him, and he'd stopped taking his medication. Our concern is that might happen again.
There are two incidents in the last 18 months in Mr. Caston's notes. Could you talk us through them?
Yes. On the 24th of March 2015...
This is on page 27 of the bundle, sir.
Andrew got into a fight with one of the other patients and the nursing staff had to intervene.
What was it about?
I think there was a disagreement about whether the other patient had stolen Andrew's cigarettes. The other occasion... Shall I move on to the other occasion?
Please do.
Andrew had been complaining about the side effects of his medication. He was gaining weight and felt sluggish. He'd been on the same medication for 5 years, so I and the clinical team, thought it was reasonable to try a change to see if we could keep him stable but reduce some of the side effects. I replaced his dosage of risperidone with aripiprazole.
And?
Unfortunately, aripiprazole didn't work for Andrew. He became withdrawn and depressed. He was sitting in his room, in the dark. He refused to talk to anyone. His mother came for a visit and Andrew was violent and abusive. After that, we put him back on risperidone.
And he stabilised once that happened?
Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Nyman?
Thank you, sir. I'd like to start with Mr. Caston's index offence.
Setting fire to the school? I'm reliant on the notes here. I wasn't working for the health authority at the time.
Indeed. And in Mr. Caston's medical notes, it's described, as you say, as setting fire to a school. Mr. Caston was convicted of arson and then sent here under a 3741.
Yes, I'm sorry,
Have you seen the police records of Mr. Caston's index offence?
Well, there's no reason why...
Yes or no?
No.
I put them in the bundle, page 73. Most of the time I find clinical notes are admirably accurate. Sometimes they're not. Very occasionally they're downright misleading. Could you read out paragraph 4 from page 73, please?
He said that he'd chosen a bank holiday Monday night as he knew the school would be completely empty then. He said he'd been frightened enough himself as a child and he hadn't wanted to frighten the children.
And paragraph 12 at the bottom of the page?
You want me to read this too?
Yes, please.
He set fire to a full waste paper basket using lighter fuel as an accelerant.
Go on.
When apprehended, he was sitting in the classroom by the metal basket, feeding the flames with folders of schoolwork. He had made no attempt to encourage the fire to spread further or to evade discovery.
Are you surprised by what you've just read?
In what sense?
Is that the picture you had in your mind of his index offence when you read in his medical notes that Mr. Caston had set fire to a school? Yes or no?
No.
To support Mr. Caston's continued detention under the Mental Health Act, you must show that there's a likelihood that he would harm himself or others if released. Having now read the police report, do you believe that when he committed his index offence, he harmed himself or others?
There are other factors.
That wasn't the question.
It doesn't sound as though anyone was harmed by Andrew's fire setting, but arson is a serious crime. They could have been.
What? If they'd been standing in the waste paper basket?
Mr. Caston.
You've got to admit that was funny.
The next incident you mentioned, The fracas among the patients. Were you on the ward at the time?
No.
So you're not in a position to give us first-hand information about what happened?
Well, not as such.
A simple no is fine. What about the third and final incident?
I was on the ward and attended the incident when Andrew assaulted his mother.
That's not what happened.
Andrew, you have to wait until it's your turn to speak.
You didn't witness the assault?
I was with another patient on the ward. I arrived in Andrew's room shortly after his mother pushed the panic button. The room was in chaos. The furniture had been thrown about. Andrew's mum was sitting on the bed with her hands over her face. There was blood all over her.
Mr. Caston.
It's not what happened. I stand here to speak truth to power. I will not be a patient.
Andrew.
No, I will not be silenced.
Ms. Nyman, I'm calling a 5-minute adjournment to give Mr. Caston a chance to calm down. If after that this behaviour continues, I will send your client back to the ward and we'll have to carry on without him.
Thank you very much, Judge. We appreciate that. Come on, Andrew.
Don't suck up to him. You're my lawyer. I command you. I'm not going anywhere.
Just to the corridor, please.
I'll be back!
Go on, then. You might as well say it.
Say what?
Andrew, you're your own worst enemy and you've got to control yourself in there because anyone would think you didn't want to get out.
Yeah, all that. Do you want a polo?
Thanks. But I am, in the jargon, self-sabotaging. Go on then. Tell me off.
I don't need to, do I?
I'm sorry.
Don't apologise to me. I get paid for today, whether you get out or not.
I know, but you've put in so much work and you're so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and hopeful about it all.
It's really not about me, Andrew.
Have I blown it?
Nope. After all, you didn't throw a chair at them.
Good point.
I once had a client who lunged across the table and tried to throttle the judge.
Oh, well then.
But you really have to behave from now on.
Okay.
Whatever they say. Just, you know, deep breaths.
I might have to hum.
I'm sorry?
The humming. The humming really helps. It helps you out to control. It is productive for me.
Right.
In moments of stress, like when that little shit is talking about my mother.
We need to get back in there. Will you behave?
Yes. Can I have another polo?
Take the packet.
And Rebecca?
Yes?
Will you have a word with the judge, please? About the humming. Please.
Although it's an unconventional request, I am aware how stressful these hearings can be, so I am minded to tolerate a low background humming from Mr. Caston, as long as it doesn't become too persistent or intrusive.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Reynolds, if we can pick up where we left off. You didn't see my client attack or threaten Mrs. Caston?
No. Andrew was standing blocking the way into the room. He was shouting.
What was he shouting?
He was swearing. Hysterical. Incoherent.
He didn't attack you or the nursing staff?
His arms were flailing about. As you can see, he's a big man. I would describe it as a threatening situation, but no, he didn't attack us.
What happened then?
The two nurses subdued Andrew and I checked on Mrs. Caston.
Her injuries were in fact trivial, weren't they?
He'd slapped her face, causing her nose to bleed. I'm not sure I'd describe that as trivial.
Superficial, then?
Her injuries were certainly considerably less serious than I'd first feared when I ran into Andrew's room and saw her covered in blood.
Did you blame yourself for what happened?
Yes. I was the RC.
I'm sorry?
Responsible clinician, sir.
Thank you.
I'd made the decision to change his medication, which, with the benefit of hindsight, was a mistake.
Mr. Caston is now back on Risperidone, is he?
Risperidone, yes.
Thank you, Doctor, but I really don't think it matters whether I can pronounce it or not. The issue is, does my client need it?
And he does. He's been back on Risperidone since the incident with his mother, and we've had no further problems.
So that's, what, 16 months now?
Just over, yes.
And Mr. Caston is stable?
Yes.
He's compliant? He's happy to take the medication administered to him?
Yes.
He's been out on unescorted ground leave for over a year now?
Yes.
And in March this year, you promoted him to unescorted community leave.
Yes.
What does that mean in practice?
Andrew leaves the ward for 3 hours each afternoon. He's free to go wherever he likes.
Any problems?
What do you mean?
Well, has he, for example, returned late? Not returned at all? Taken banned substances? Taken alcohol? Been involved in any trouble at all?
Well, there was one occasion when he came back having been drinking, but aside from that, no.
So aside from that one occasion, when I believe he'd met a friend in a pub and unwisely had one pint of lager, his conduct has been exemplary?
Yes.
And how about on the unit over the last year?
Over the last year, there has been no cause for concern.
Well, you'll have to help me out here, Dr. Reynolds, because I'm puzzled. Given my client's exemplary behaviour in the hospital and on unescorted leave, what could he be doing that he isn't already doing to demonstrate his suitability for release?
Andrew is doing extremely well in the unit. My concern is that if he was back in the community without the support we provide, he might relapse.
If there's nothing Andrew could be doing that he's not already doing to show his suitability for release, it sounds as though you think he should be locked up here indefinitely.
Of course not. I just believe we should proceed with caution. There's no rush.
With all due respect, Dr. Reynolds, that's wrong. My client has been locked up in here for 7 years. He's understandably very keen to get out and start living a normal life as soon as possible.
Too right. What Andrew wants and what is in Andrew's best interest are not necessarily the same thing.
You can't keep Mr. Caston locked up because you believe it is in his best interests. The law takes deprivation of liberty very seriously. You can only keep Mr. Caston here against his will under section if you believe his incarceration is necessary. Given that he's allowed out of the unit every day for 3 hours at a time, are you really telling this tribunal that you believe his section continues to be necessary?
Well, yes, I am. I have concerns, grave concerns, that once back in the community, Mr. Caston would stop taking his prescribed medication and relapse. And as we saw 16 months ago, and indeed 7 years ago, at the time of his index offence, without the right medication, Mr. Caston can be a danger to others.
So what is your evidence?
I'm sorry?
Why do you have these, what do you call them, grave concerns?
Well, they're based on 17 years of clinical experience.
Sorry, perhaps my question was insufficiently clear. What specifically in Mr. Caston's behaviour in the present leads you to conclude that he would stop taking his medication?
Andrew lacks insight into his condition. He doesn't accept that he's suffering from schizophrenia.
He's resistant to the diagnosis of schizophrenia, but does he accept he's not always well?
Yes. He tends to use phrases like, when I'm not myself, or when things get dark. Andrew doesn't want to fully acknowledge how serious his illness is. I'm sympathetic to this. It can be depressing and frightening, acknowledging that you have a serious mental condition. But my worry is that it means Andrew doesn't really think he needs his medication. And he does.
But he takes his medication at the moment without complaint.
Yes. But I think that's because it's hard not to, in here. I think out in the community he would stop complying, because he doesn't really think he needs it. There's also a danger that he'd try to self-medicate using cannabis, which has happened in the past.
That's back in 2009.
It's a while ago, but it's the last time Andrew was living out in the world, so it might be a guide to how he'd be in that situation again.
I have no more questions. Thank you.
Right. Let's move on to Charlotte Workman.
Miss Workman, you're a psychiatric nurse here.
Yes, I've worked here for 5 years.
And have you been on Finn Ward for all of that time?
I had a 6 month secondment away, but the rest of the time, yes.
So you know Andrew quite well?
Yes.
How would you characterise his day-to-day behaviour on the ward?
He's quite up and down. Most of the time he's fine, but sometimes he gets really annoyed with something and, well, he lets it get to him.
And what sort of thing?
If he thinks something isn't fair, for example, the other week we were short-staffed and so his unescorted leave started an hour later than usual. He got very frustrated. He came up to the locked door of the nurse's station and he was, you know, banging against it, shouting. I think it might be because he... I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
No, no, please go on.
Andrew's been here since he was 21 and before that he lived with his mum. I think some of this isn't his illness. I think maybe he's just quite young for his age.
The fight that Andrew got into with another patient, you witnessed it, didn't you?
Yes.
Could you tell the tribunal what happened?
They'd been playing cards for cigarettes. I mean, betting on the game using cigarettes, which they're not allowed to do, of course. Charlie lost, and then he told Thomas, the nurse on duty, and he, quite rightly, took the cigarettes Andrew had won and gave them back to Charlie. Then, later, Charlie's in the garden having a smoke, and Andrew comes up and grabs the cigarette he's smoking off him and stubs it out on Charlie's arm. So Charlie punches him in the face, and then they're kind of rolling around on the floor together, belting one another, which doesn't last long because we arrive, me and Thomas, and separate them.
Thank you.
Mrs. Nyman?
You and Nurse Thomas Coe broke up the fight.
Yes.
Was it a frightening situation?
How do you mean?
Did you feel under threat yourself?
No, not at all. It was just playground stuff.
Stubbing a cigarette out on someone's arm is a bit more than playground stuff.
Yeah, of course it is. But once he'd done that, Andrew had made his point, really. That's what I felt. There was no more anger left in him.
Did you speak to Andrew after the incident?
Yes.
Was he delusional? Was he, for example, hearing voices that told him to do it?
No.
People suffering from Andrew's condition can sometimes have bad impulse control. Do you think Andrew was out of control when he stubbed out the cigarette on Charlie's arm?
No, not at all. It was nothing to do with his illness. He was just being nasty.
In law, if the assault is not related to Mr. Caston's mental illness, we cannot consider it as a factor in this tribunal.
Thank you, sir. Miss Workman, how do you think Andrew is doing now?
He's... Well, you know he's progressed to unescorted leave, which is a really big step, and it's going great. He's thriving on it. I mean, at first he found it a bit daunting, and he used to just go up to the local Lidl and wander around the aisles, and then sit smoking in the car park till it was time to come home. But even then, he wanted to be out. I mean, he's never back late, but he's never ever early. He'll be at the door at 5 o'clock on the dot. Even before he could think of anything to do with his 3 hours, he always wanted to take it. Then his social worker gave him this article she clipped out of the paper, free stuff to do in Reading, and since then he's never looked back. I mean, I never knew about half the stuff he'd done. Did you know there's a museum of rural life in Reading? He's visited a cat sanctuary. He's even been to a free lecture at the university. He got chucked out for interrupting, but still...
So he's developing coping skills?
Definitely. I mean, some of these places he's had to take 2 separate buses to get to, and he works that all out.
And how's he doing on the unit?
He still gets down about his life sometimes, which is understandable. But, well, I'd say he's doing OK, considering.
When you say OK, considering... Considering what?
Andrew's no fool. He knows that his illness has already cost him a big chunk of his life, years that he'll never get back. And hopefully he's learning to manage his illness, but he'll never be completely well.
Thanks for that.
I'm just trying to be truthful, Andrew.
Do you think Mr. Caston should be released from his section?
I couldn't say.
Please try to answer the question, Miss Workman.
It's not up to me.
You're an experienced psychiatric nurse who's been working with him for 5 years. What's your professional opinion?
I'm afraid I'd agree with Dr. Reynolds. I think it's too soon.
Preferably.
Mr. Caston.
Why?
I defer to his experience.
No further questions, Miss Workman. Sir, we were hoping to hear from my client's mother today, but she's not arrived yet.
Ah, that's unfortunate.
I spoke to her last night. She's definitely coming.
Well, we'll adjourn for 10 minutes, Miss Nyman, and see if you can't track her down.
The number you are dialing is not available.
Shit.
It might be worth checking her Facebook page.
What?
She's a bit obsessive. She updates it about 6 times a day.
How do I do that?
Give me your mobile. Are you not on Facebook?
No.
I thought all middle-aged women were on Facebook. Here. She's uploaded a rant about Network Rail. She says she's stuck 10 minutes outside Reading and the train hasn't moved for half an hour.
Let me see. That was, what, 11:15?
She's definitely on her way. Look what she posted first thing this morning.
Going to see my lovely boy today. Wish me luck.
And that's nice, what she called me. Lovely boy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And she'll be here. Oi, Mum, the judge is asking for you. Yeah, this time she'll definitely get here, won't she?
Daffodil House caters for 12 clients. There's qualified staff in residence and the staffing ratio is 1-3. So Mr. Caston would be monitored and would have support. In addition, the unit runs training courses to help residents' adaptation.
What sort of courses?
Everything from cooking to managing a budget. Basic life skills, really.
But currently there isn't a place available at Daffodil House.
No, but there's really nowhere else suitable for Mr. Caston. He needs a high level of support. The pressure on these units is acute. There's always a waiting list, but there's also quite a high turnover. As clients become more self-reliant, they move on. I've talked to the manager about Mr. Caston. We feel confident a bed would become available in the next month to 6 weeks.
In your risk assessment, you identify non-compliance as a concern.
Yes. If Mr. Caston is released, one of the conditions I'd suggest would be regular meetings with me and with the community psychiatric nurse. So we can see how he's managing and check he's taking his medication.
I see in this report you're not recommending regular drug screenings.
The last record of cannabis use is 7 years ago.
Mr. Caston has been in a secure unit for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. He misused cannabis the last time he was living in the community, and that led to a severe psychotic episode.
But there have been no issues around drug use during his unescorted leave, although it's very easy to get hold of cannabis in the city centre. We could certainly add a requirement for fortnightly drug screenings if the panel wanted that.
What role would you see Mr. Caston's mother playing if he was released?
Mr. Caston is an only child. His parents are divorced and his father hasn't been in touch since Andrew was hospitalized. Andrew's lost touch with the friends he did have as a teenager, which might not be altogether a bad thing since they're the people he was smoking cannabis with. So, apart from the professionals who are working with him, Andrew's only got his mum. She's very important to him.
But he's attacked her physically on more than one occasion.
We've talked about that. Mrs. Caston says that was Andrew's illness, not Andrew. She hopes eventually to have Andrew back in the family home. She will be a regular part of his life. She'll provide love and support that could make his transition to living in the community much easier.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for this witness, Miss Nyman?
No, thank you, sir.
In that case, I think we should hear from your client.
Andrew? Are you ready?
Ish. Ready-ish. Mr. Caston, your lawyer will now ask you some questions, and the tribunal may have some further questions after that.
Your Honour, I don't mean any disrespect by this, but before she starts, I want to explain something to you. It's quite short, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't get confused. Is that possible?
Andrew,
Rebecca, let the judge speak.
It is unusual, but I don't see why not, as long as it's short.
Yes, I greatly appreciate that. Can you imagine what it must be like to explain colour to a blind man? That's what it's like. It's exhausting, frankly. I'm living in an extra dimension that you don't have. Or you don't have yet. I have a third eye, which isn't something that I've made up. There's a lot about it on the internet. It's well understood in the mystic tradition. And that means that I have privileged access to stuff that you can't even imagine. But I want to live among you, as a friend.
Thank you.
You heard Dr. Reynolds' evidence, Mr. Caston.
I did.
He believes you lack insight into your condition.
Well...
You disagree?
We agree to differ. I don't like being labelled schizophrenic. It's balderdash, really. It's just a big doctor word for something that they don't understand. But I've jumped through all their hoops and ticked all his boxes, and I've gone to the group, haven't I?
You've made very good progress.
Yeah.
How do you think you'd cope outside the hospital environment?
I'd be okay.
Excuse me?
Well, you took your time.
This is my client's mother, sir.
Take a seat, Mrs. Castle.
Thank you.
Mr. Caston, you've told the panel you don't accept the doctor's diagnosis of schizophrenia.
No, it's bullshit.
Do you accept that you have a condition that makes you experience the world very differently to the rest of us?
Yes.
Do you accept that this condition has caused you to act in dangerous and harmful ways?
Sometimes in the past.
Like, for example, when you attacked your mother?
At the time, I didn't think she was my mother. Oh, which doesn't make it okay. Sorry, Mum.
What can you do to stop that happening?
Take the drugs. It only happens when I don't take the drugs.
If you don't accept the diagnosis, why do you accept the treatment?
It's not an illness. It's more like a power. But you can't live in the world with it. You need to half close your third eye. And that's what the drugs do. They bring me down to your level. And that's where I need to be happy and in the world. The only time things got bad for years is when they changed my meds, and then, well, it did all get a bit Scooby-Doo for a bit. And my mum got the worst of it. But that was Dr. Reynolds' bad, not mine. And we're not doing that again. No, sorry. Are we, Dr. Reynolds?
If you were allowed out of hospital, how can the panel be sure you'll take your medication?
I'm very motivated not to end up back here. No disrespect, but I want to be out. And I'll do whatever it takes.
And what if you felt there was a danger of you tipping back into a florid state?
I'd self-report.
Tell me how that would work.
There are things that... If they start happening, I tell someone, I'm trying to think of an example here. If I start understanding what cats are saying, talk to Mum. And that's the other thing. It's not just me. I've got my mum and my social worker, and they keep an eye on me. If things started tipping, they'd step in.
And what are your hopes for the future, Mr. Caston?
Get out of here. Do really well at Daffodil House, get out of there, move back home, be in my own room, listening to the Kaiser Chiefs and Radiohead Be Kind Rewind.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
Now, going back to your index offence.
Do you know that every cell in your body is replaced every 6 years? There's not one cell in my body that was there at the time, that's still there now. I'm a completely different person.
Do you remember what triggered your arson attack on the school?
Becca, do we have to talk about this?
Yes, we do. Andrew.
There were bad things happening to children there.
That was a delusion, wasn't it?
When I walked into the school that night, I could hear them crying.
Now, there's absolutely no evidence of any harm to children at your old school.
Logically, it's possible that you're correct about that. Being right about reality hasn't always been my strong point. At the time, I was very certain that I was there to right a wrong.
The problem for the tribunal, Mr. Caston, is that we need to know that you won't fall into a similar situation again and act in a way that is dangerous to yourself or others.
It was a long time ago.
Thank you. Those are all of our questions. Mrs. Caston, would you like to speak to the tribunal?
I don't think so. I'm just here to support Andrew.
Mum, you support me by speaking up for me. That's the whole point.
I just don't think I... It's not my kind of thing, Andrew.
No one's here because they enjoy it. Even the judge would rather be out doing... whatever judges do when they're not judging. And it's like going to the dentist without my clothes on. For me, it's no one's kind of thing, Mum.
Don't bully me.
I'm not bullying you. I'm begging you.
It is entirely up to you, Mrs. Caston.
I'd like to speak to you in confidence, without Andrew being in the room.
That isn't possible. Andrew has a legal right to know everything that is said at the tribunal.
What about if I write you a note?
If you're putting it in evidence, then Andrew gets to read it.
Sir, I think if Mrs. Caston is not comfortable speaking, we should respect that and move on.
I'll speak. I do really love you, Andrew.
I know.
What did you want to say to the tribunal?
I'm so sorry, Andrew. All this, it just feels like more than I can manage. I'm scared.
Are you concerned for your physical safety, Mrs. Caston?
I know he never meant to hurt me, but he did. Not just that time in the hospital, before when he was living at home, so...
So?
I'm definitely not having him to live with me again. I just can't. Oh, do shut up, Andrew!
Miss Nyman?
What you've told the tribunal today is very different to what you told Margosha Day, Mr. Caston's social worker, when she interviewed you for her report.
I know.
Are you telling the tribunal you don't think Andrew should be released from hospital?
No, I'm not saying that. Andrew's tried really hard, and I think he's ready.
Well, you know there are no immediate plans for Mr. Caston to live with you.
Andrew has plans.
If at some distant point in the future Mr. Caston became well enough to live in unsupported accommodation, it would be entirely up to you whether he moved back home or got a place of his own. I can see you have become distressed about this, but with respect, it's not a current worry, is it, Mrs. Caston?
I suppose not.
In the social circumstances report, Margosha Day says regular visits with you would be valuable to Andrew if he was living outside the hospital. Are you still comfortable with that?
Yes, of course I'd visit. But not all the time. I have my own life.
Once a week? Twice a week?
Something like that.
We all appreciate what a difficult time you've had and how much you've done to support Andrew. How would you sum up your relationship with the tribunal?
It's not easy. But he's a lovely boy, Andrew. He's my lovely boy.
No further questions.
Ms. Nyman, would you like to sum up for your client?
Thank you, sir. My client is undoubtedly mentally ill. If you sat next to him on a bus and he started humming or telling you about his third eye, you might wish you'd chosen another seat. You might even move to another part of the bus. But that's a long way from saying it is necessary to keep him locked up on a section. It is uncontested that when my client is taking his medication, he is stable and safe. So the question becomes, can we be sure that Mr. Caston will take his medication if he's released to live in the community? And we can. First, Andrew is very motivated to get out and stay out of hospital. He may deny that he suffers from schizophrenia, but aside from that, he has good insight into the nature of his condition and the need to take the medications that manage it. Second, Andrew will have support from his social worker, from the excellent residential team at Daffodil House, and from his mother. Mrs. Caston has told us she needs to draw boundaries limiting the time she commits to her son, but during the last 7 years, she's been a regular visitor and an unflinching support to him in the unit here. And as she said herself, that regular loving commitment would continue in the next phase of his life. Third, and most significantly, we don't need to guess whether Andrew can cope outside of the hospital. He has shown us that he can. He has been on 3-hour-long unescorted leave daily for over 6 months, and he hasn't taken drugs or got into trouble. Moving from this to living in a supported unit is a big step, but it is the right step, the necessary step, and it should be the next step for Andrew. We are respectfully requesting a conditional discharge today. We agree that the conditions should be that Andrew resides at Daffodil House, meets with his team, and takes his medication.
Thank you. If you'd all like to step outside, we'll call you back when we're ready.
Oh, that was good. I'd let me out if I heard that.
Yes, but you're not a judge.
Hello, honey.
I shouldn't even be talking to you after what you did in there, you old cow.
I do love you.
How long would they take?
I don't know.
I like your shoes.
I got them last weekend. Bought them online.
They suit you.
Thanks. They're my walking out of here shoes.
Fellow panel members, would like to thank you all for your contributions today, which have greatly assisted us in making our decision. The tribunal has decided to grant Mr. Caston a conditional discharge. The following conditions will apply. Release will occur once a suitable placement has been found at the Daffodil House supported living unit. Mr. Caston will have regular appointments with his social worker and a community psychiatric nurse to monitor his progress and ensure his compliance with his medication. And Mr. Caston will undergo fortnightly drug tests for illicit substances. Failure to comply with any of these conditions, or failure to pass the drugs test, will result in an immediate recall to the hospital.
Bloody hell, you beauty!
Congratulations, Andrew. Are you okay?
Yeah. It's just all a bit, yeah.
I'm really pleased.
Are you? Really?
Oh, come here.
It might be a month or two before they find you a place. So you won't be walking out of here today, I'm afraid. But it won't be too long. Your shoes will still be new.
In Section by Clara Glynn, Rebecca Nyman was played by Claire Corbett, Andrew Caston, Joe Sims, the judge, David Holt, Dr. Ruckman, Catherine Igo, Dr. Reynolds, David Timpson, Wendy Caston, A.D. Allen, Charlotte Workman, Kirsty Oswald, and Magosha Day by Nicola Ferguson. Section was a BBC Scotland production, produced and directed by David Ian Neville.
And tomorrow's drama, Protection, is set at the Court of Protection. Mary has been in a minimally conscious state for over 3 years since being involved in a road accident. The barrister, Rebecca Nyman, is representing her husband, who feels it's time to allow her to die. That's Behind Closed Doors, Protection, tomorrow at 2:15 here on BBC Radio 4. In a couple of minutes, the Kitchen Cabinet will be in Birmingham. This week, the panel will learn about the history of chocolate making in the city, as well as offering their own tips on the best chocolates to use in different types of cooking. And Tim Anderson will up the ante by brandishing his blowtorch in order to extol the virtues of cheap chocolate. That's in a couple of minutes. Then at 3:30.
Watch the world go by and you can't help noticing that behind all the facts and opinions, arguments and the rest, there's an awful lot of, well, behaviour. People are at it all the time, not least politicians. There they go again over Europe, behaving or misbehaving. On the human zoo, we're less interested in what people say, the fors and againsts, than the behavioural science behind it. What goes on in their heads, hearts, instincts, and ours? The Human Zoo, with me, Michael Blastland, making sense of events through the lens of psychology. Here on BBC Radio 4, today at 3:30.
Now here's Claudia Hammond with a timely but possibly unwelcome reminder.
Exam time continues for many, and after our recent discussion on the impact exams can have on mental health, lots of you have been in touch. So we're looking at a radical suggestion that involves doing away with the anxiety of exams forever and replacing them with a system based on the technology used in computer games and in teaching languages in the military. And we've got an online test for you where you can discover whether you're part of the 2.5% of the population who's a super super tasker, brilliant at doing lots of things at once. Join me, Claudia Hammond, here for All in the Mind on BBC Radio 4 this evening at 9 o'clock.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. The French authorities say they've begun an operation to arrest about 40 football supporters suspected of involvement in clashes in Marseille, where England played Russia in the European Championships. UEFA have given Russia a suspended disqualification from Euro 2016. Speaking in the Commons, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, said Britain was assisting the French with security in the city of Lens, where England play Wales on Thursday.
We have police spotters who are the people who are trained to spot potential troublemakers. We are giving some support to the French in post-incident analysis of the CCTV footage, for example. And we're also providing some investigative support to the French.
The French President, François Hollande, says there's no doubt that the killing of a policeman and his partner on the outskirts of Paris yesterday was a terrorist act. The victims were stabbed to death at their home. Britain's right to restrict payment of child benefits to some EU migrants has been backed by the European Court of Justice. Judges ruled that it was lawful to withhold family benefits to migrants who were not working if they did not have the right to remain in the UK. The Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, his shadow cabinet and leading trade unionists have appealed to the whole Labour movement to get behind the campaign for Britain to remain in the EU. The Leave campaign is insisting that, in the event of Brexit, money would be made available to make sure that farmers and universities would not lose out as a result of losing European funding. Italy's former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has been transferred to intensive care in Milan after undergoing heart surgery. The 79-year-old was admitted to hospital last week with a heart valve problem. Scientists are warning that crops of cauliflower, broccoli and cabbage could be devastated by an infestation of moths arriving from Europe. An alert has been issued about tens of millions of diamondback moths, which are resistant to most insecticides. BBC News.
You probably don't need me reminding you there's a referendum next week, and on a daily basis we're being served up information from both sides of the debate. How do we as humans deal with this data and form a reasoned opinion? The Human Zoo investigates in half an hour. First on Radio 4, it's time for The Kitchen Cabinet. Here's your host, Jay Rayner.
Hello and welcome to The Kitchen Cabinet. Over the past 7 weeks, I've chivied my gang of culinary revolutionaries across the UK as they've worked tirelessly to bring innovations to your kitchen and satisfaction to even your greediest dinner party guests. The conversation has been overflowing with ancient feasts and cutting-edge food science. And today, as we set out our stall in the great city of Birmingham, I expect us to reach a culinary climax. Oh, yes. My panel this week with answers to your cooking and eating questions are forged in the fires of Wisconsin, a MasterChef winner who'll champion Japanese eatables as he does at his Brixton restaurant Namban, it's Tim Anderson. A gutsy free thinker fueled by Spanish charcuterie and Scotch whiskey, it's Glaswegian cook and Catalonian food champion Rachel McCormick.